Blog Talk Radio.
Jim Williams on the line here. As I was saying, he is a contributor with the Huffington Post. And, of course, he has a podcast called Politically Incorrect. And Jim, I appreciate you coming on and coming into a little
firestorm. Very entertaining, last 5 minutes. Sorry I didn't get in earlier.
No, I didn't expect that. But all I'm saying, and we can move on. I'm not, and I'm sure Tom will be happy with me later, but that's okay. I'll pick it up. All I'm saying is that when you hear a conversation, it's okay. Let me put it in these terms, in African American terms. It's almost like when I hear another talking about, it's okay to see blackface. It's okay to be called the N-word. It's okay for any of those things. And so if it's okay for those things, then what did people struggle for? What did people die for? And you have a caller up here or guest or whoever it was, be honest about it, just talking about she's Native American, and it's okay to be talking about the Redskins. It's okay. That's not how she grew up. Well, then – does it really matter how you really grew up if they've tried to, there's no other ethnic group on the planet that has been annihilated and almost cleansed out from the face of the earth than Native Americans. How do you not get that? And so all my point was, if where you going, I feel bad for you, but if you can't be sensitive, my point is, if you can't be sensitive to your own group, you damn sure can't be sensitive to mine. And we go through the same type of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm trying to get. And she was there. She's pointing out the problems of the Democrats this. And as soon as I bring up Trump, make America great again, she says, I'm not a Republican. Well, then why are you bringing up the Democrats? Man, you can't have it both ways.
No, it's part of the problem on Native American issues is really threefold, real quick, and hopefully she gets this, is that the unemployment rate among, people from the different tribes that are on reservations right now is really, it's not even close to what the national norm is. It's way below. The drinking issue on Native American land comes from A, not having a job, and B, the basic situations of really more along the lines of clinical depression. Mm. And it all feeds back in. If you don't have a job, you're not feeling like you're productive, and things begin to spiral out of control. Furthermore, and again, not that I'm taking sides on this, but furthermore, you've got the problem which happened in a number of places around the country where, if you recall, back in the 2018 midterms, they had problems with regard to actually even voting because there were people who were supervisor of elections saying you have to have a street number. Well, if you live on a reservation, there is no such thing as a street number. So they not only were they disenfranchised, they were literally, here are the Native Americans, the Americans, and they're not getting to vote. So there's a lot of beef to be had from the Native Americans on how we have not been anywhere near right with them from day one. So, again, I don't know what she did, how she grew up. I caught the tail end of it, but there's a lot of issues over there with regard to Washington's football team. Why Jack Kent Cook didn't do it, why Snyder hasn't done it. Changing a name is not a tough thing to do. It's a pretty simple thing to do. I know that Abe Poland was very upset, with what happened with guns and violence, and he took, he changed the bullets to the wizard. So it's not that tough to do, and there are people who still have the bullets jerseys. Fine, it's up to them, they want to wear it, but he had a moral compass that said, I don't want to be associated with guns or violence, and so I'm going to change the name of the team.
I just want to ask you, we're talking about doing some different ventures and things, and part
right.
of it is to talk about these areas, these issues, and the plight of different ethnic groups and why they vote the way they vote and why they choose the politicians. What one of the biggest things I see when it comes to, and Jim, just to get your thoughts on this before we go to, Bob Barr and all that, but minority groups tend to, myself included, tend to vote against their own best interest. Poor whites, you can put that in a category. Voting against your own best interest. Why, in your opinion, I don't know if you've seen any data or anything, that seem to happen, and why is that such a trend with some?
I think a lot of it comes with comfortable, you're comfortable with a certain party or a certain person. And I've seen it, and there's empirical data that goes, that bears it out. And that is that, they're not, when I say they, I mean, fill in the blank. It can be blacks, Jews, LGBTQ plus, whatever, Hispanics. The whole thing boils down to not taking the time, and this is a general thing for all voters, not just any specific ethnic group, that basically they are informed by what they feel, is the right narrative for them. So whether it's a newspaper that they read or don't read, cable news network or how they get their information, more often than not, they try to get the information that goes along their own lines. They don't look outside the box and try to find voting records. They don't delve into the true background of the candidates. Look at why in heaven's name would white women break for Trump, white educated women break for Trump as they did against Hillary Clinton, given the fact that Trump's vice president is doing everything humanly possible to roll back women's rights in this country along with the LGBTQ thing, and he's doing it all in the name of Christianity. So, if you're looking at keeping your 401k going, okay, I get that, but if you're looking at what you're doing to generations of women, generations of Hispanics, In Florida, he won the Cuban vote based on the fact that, Little Havana was like, oh yeah, we don't want to deal with Castro anymore. Even though Obama had started a dialogue to try to work something out, that was never going to happen because they didn't want it to happen. And so, he, being President Trump, got some areas which didn't make any sense. I mean, when you go to the crosstabs, which is, basically what I do is kind of like sabermetrics or politics, and you go through it and you look at it and you realize that, okay, I see where they piece together this thing. I don't know if you can do that ever again, but, everything broke right, and he was able to do it. So, again, to your point, I think everybody needs to be more attuned to what matters to you. Find out, what you need to do and what these issues are, and then hold these politicians to it. It doesn't matter whether you got a city council person or a state representative or, congressperson or senator. In heaven's name, when it comes to the presidential election in 2020, for heaven's sakes, pay attention, because these are things that, you'll never get back once, once the president gets in there, they change They can do a lot of damage in 4 years.
Yeah, and I like I said, I'll get some backlash, but I'm a big boy. I got my big boy pants on. I can handle it. And I'm gonna go to Reggie Howell. But as I go to him, just to further, you don't have to respond, just to further what I'm saying. You know, if you can't be sensitive to your own ethnic group, I think it's two things. I think, you know, sometimes we may be products of our own environment. So, you know, in other words, you may look like me, but you didn't grow up like me. And so your policies might be, or your beliefs might be a little bit different. You might have the same color skin, but you may not have experienced the type of things that I have. And I think it's true in all oppressed groups, Native Americans being one. So
sure.
I don't know that person's background, but that could be the issue. If you're going to laugh at your own people, this mainstream society doesn't want to give, be sensitive to the word redskin, and you think it's not a big deal, then, again, if it came to anything, if I came to you door and said, hey, you know, can you help me with, you know, mass incarceration, the double standards in terms of criminal justice reform, and you probably won't get it because you never experienced it, and if you don't care about your own people getting slaughtered, then you certainly ain't gonna care about other groups getting slaughtered and things of that nature, and that's my point I was trying to make with her. I'm gonna go to Reggie Howell, and I see you, T. Hang on the line. Go ahead, Reg.
Hey, Reg.
Good evening. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what's interesting? That there's old saying in Washington that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. I see two things. I'm kind of happy with this. It seems like Democrats are spinning their wheels. They're upset because the Republicans changed the rules as far as negotiating what goes on the floor as far as networking. They're upset because the rule changes what the Republicans have done. And now it seems like they have no answers. To me, where is this Democrat Party going? It seems like they don't have a clue right now.
Well, I think, Reg, what's going on is, kind of the same thing that happened in 1976, where the party needs, the Republicans have had this happen as well. They need a cleansing. You know, they need to come together and try to decide who do we really want to be? And are we as progressive, or are we as in touch with what the values are of, are they Bernie Sanders progressive? Or are they, is everybody out in that area? Is it the Obama-Biden, which is what Biden keeps talking about? Look. You guys know that in 2018, I talked to almost everybody who ran for office around the country. And to be true, only about 10% of people got elected. And remember, it was a wave election in the House for the Democrats. Were elected on local issues, and specifically, more to the point, on healthcare. They weren't progressive. The ideas were not progressive. They were mainstream and socially progressive. So I think that what the Democratic Party is going to have to do, because the Republican Party is now tacked so far to the right that that whole center lane is wide open, and that's where the rest of the world lives. So I think the Democrats have to be careful not to go so far to the left that they lose touch with, the average person.
Right. One quick question. How much damage did the Clintons do with them putting a fist hold on the 2016 election? Because just one final question. It amazed me that every time Dick and Harry wants to run for the nomination for the Democrat, but where was this fervor, including Joe Biden, why was it that they want to give her a coronation? Like, you know, we're going to let you have this nomination. Because I blame Clinton for 45, who's unfit to be served as president, in my opinion. I mean, she was incompetent the way she ran her campaign. She was incompetent the way she had people around her. And my thing was, it was so much baggage around her. Plus, she was a frail candidate. When she passed out at one of the stops, and they had saw her as this frail old white woman that can't lead the country. And here's this gangster, for better words, Trump, who runs the United States. It's like it's the mafia.
So what, you want me to reply about Secretary Clinton? Is that where we're going with this?
Yeah, the incompetence of Secretary Clinton.
I think that where the problem with Clinton was, she was very bright, and she had a lot of, you know, she's a policy person. The problem is she wasn't a retail politician, which is what her husband was. I mean, Bill Clinton was probably, of this generation, the greatest retail politician, personally, I've ever seen. I mean, he could go in a room and automatically connect with pretty much anybody in the room. That was not the case with Secretary Clinton. She had a disconnect problem, and she had a kind of a steeliness to her, a bit of aloofness to her that turned some people off. So I think that what happened was the Democratic Party was mad because Bernie Sanders, who caucuses as a Democrat but isn't really a member of the Democratic Party, was seen as the Democrats' Trump. Because the Republicans, if you remember, there were 14 guys and ladies that were running for the nomination, and they saw Trump as the outsider and not a Republican. And they didn't really come around to Trump until it was pretty much foregone conclusion that he was going to win. If truth be told, CNN and MSNBC elected Donald Trump the president of the United States, because if they didn't give him that airtime for free, he would never have gotten it from Fox. And so, you know, they made him it made him up to be bigger than he truly was. He got over $1 billion worth of free advertising time. So all of a sudden he was getting propped up by, you know, MSNBC and CNN, the people that he now calls fake news. But back to Clinton, she was a flawed candidate. And I don't think there's any question about that. I think had Joe Biden not had issues with his family being, his son Beau dying, I think Joe probably would have gotten it, and that would have been a whole different change of a race. But he took a pass on it, and there wasn't much in the way of a competition.
Thank you.
Hey, Brad, no problem. Anytime.
Jim, I want to switch gears to the number 45 seemingly hatchet job he's doing with the Department of Homeland Security and the Secret Service. I want to deal with them first. He replaces his Secret Service director, calls him Dumbo based on his ears.
Right.
Do you think that had to do with anything with this this Chinese young lady getting all the way into his
what,
own
in Mar-a-Lago?
Yeah. Right, and I said to someone off the air, I said, you know what, I could see Trump being furious at them allowing him, that lady, to get as close as she did. But, of course, he mingles with people having weddings at that facility. But how much
right.
do you think that had to do with it? Let's just start with the Secret Service.
All right. I mean, it's fair to say that probably had a factor to it. But remember that the guy who was in charge of the Secret Service was also the guy who was very outspoken about not giving clearance to certain members of the Trump family, and as well as other members of the potential cabinet and other situations that they had. I mean, he was very much against Jared and Ivanka getting the highest clearance that they had, and he was vocal about it. And so, you know, the guy who protected him was General Kelly, And once Gerald Kelly was out, I think the writing was on the wall that, you know, they were going to change these Secret Service people. But, you know, the Secret Service works for the country. They don't work for him. And I just don't think that he was too pleased that that this guy, you know, didn't want Jared and Ivanka to have, you know, the highest possible clearance that that the president wanted them to have. So, I mean, this has been coming for a long time. And I think he's just been looking for an opportunity to do it. And once Kelly was gone, that was a good opportunity. And now this whole thing with the Chinese woman at Mar-a-Lago is, you know, maybe that was just the final straw that gave him a reason to get out of it.
You know, we're talking, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jim Williams. Of course, he's a contributing writer for the Huffington Post, also the podcast Politically Incorrect, and a bunch of other things and more to come. So you mentioned Joe Kelly, some of his underlings, if you will, that the president keeps grabbing from, one being the firing we see of Kirstjen Nielsen, who worked under General Kelly.
Right.
What did you hear? There's a lot of stories out there that there was a big argument that she refused to do certain things. And I've said to someone before off the air, a lot of these folks, you know, they have to look themselves in the mirror. Having said that, they work for a guy like Trump. They leave, they write a book, they go on tour, they make a lot of money. So their conscience is clear as far as they're concerned. Ms. Nielsen is one of those types. Being the face of taking immigrants who are trying to come in this country away from their kids, separating from their kids, what is the what you've heard, why she got fired, and the fact that are they really going to continue this implementation of taking kids away from their parents, and then they're getting lost, and parents and kids can't get reunited in this process?
Well, I think Kirstjen Nielsen and Donald Trump never really got along from the start. I'm no fan of Kirstjen Nielsen. Let me begin with that. She was a Bush. She came from the Bush administration, so she had some credibility in that regard. But at the end of the day, Kirstjen Nielsen pushed back. It's hard to believe that the President of the United States wanted to be harsher than what, you know, that was going on, but he did. And he was pushing, and Nielsen pushed back. Now, not a lot was made of this, and I'm quite frankly, I'm a bit baffled as to why it wasn't. But last week, Kirstjen Nielsen met with the, you know, Central American leaders to try to come up with a triangulation of a deal where, you know, El Salvador, Colombia, you know, some of these places where these people are coming from and seeking asylum from, that they could work together to try to make things better in those areas, which of course includes financial aid. The president literally cut her legs out from under by saying there's not going to be any aid to these three countries where most of the, you know, immigrants are coming, and they're basically attempting to, to flee what could very well be a death sentence for them. So Nielsen got upset, and the president and she had words, and that was all he needed to know. And he gets all of his advice when it comes to immigration from Stephen Miller, a 33-year-old former, someone who went to college with Richard Spencer, who runs the alt-right. Stephen Miller is the quintessential, I don't like brown people, I don't like black people, I don't like anybody who's not white, we're not letting them in the country. And if that's his, now, to your point about, you know, does this mean that we're going to have more, separations of families at the border? The president this afternoon said no. you know, for what that's worth, which, you know, tomorrow in a tweet he could say yes again. But, you know, the whole idea was no. Well, if you're going to close the border, which he's pretty damn close to doing anyway, then you're not going to get that many people. There's 103,000 people who attempted, you know, to get into the United States in the month of March, which is, you know, spiked way high. So why did that happen? Well, it happens because we are not processing anybody. So these people have been trying to get in for God knows how many months, and yet we're not. So everybody goes, oh my God, there's so much going on at the border. Well, yeah, if you take away the judges, right, which they did, and there's only two or three or five, maybe five judges who can hear these cases, how long do you think it takes to get a case passed through? So, you know, so even if, you know, let's assume, and there's good reason to assume, that all these people are fleeing a bad situation, and they have, you know, they have reason to do it. Everything we seem to keep doing is not hurting Mexico at all. It's hurting these poor people who, you know, made the trek all the way up from, like I said, El Salvador, Colombia, and other areas. And we are hurting because, you know, there are Americans who go across the bridge from San Antonio, I'm sorry, from El Paso and you know, San Diego, and they work in the automotive industry in Mexico, because Mexico, you know, the parts that people have in the Chevrolets and Fords go from there over to Mexico and back. So, you know, we have a, you know, oranges and vegetables, and, you know, there's a whole industries that are being hung up because this president seems to think that tariffs, you know, are the way to handle what he seems to feel is a trade imbalance. And if you look at it, it's so bad that, you know, his thing saying, well, we're going to shut the border. Well, the two senators from Texas went in and sat down with him and said, sir, you can't do that.
Yeah, and then
I backed off of it.
Right.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, and we can go on and on about that. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's making speeches saying we're full, no vacancies. It's just absolutely racist. It's absolutely racist. But I want to move on to Barr and then ask you about a little bit of baseball, because I know we're going to talk some baseball too. But if you're just joining us,
sure.
We're talking with Jim Williams, of course, from the Huffington Post and Politically Incorrect here on the Pat. Attorney General Barr, Jim, bottom line, 60 seconds or less, what report is going to come out? Not the one in a week, but the one that's going to come out in full. Is it going to be redacted a lot? He already clearly said, you know, I'm not going to do the Democrats' work, basically. I'm not going to go to court and ask for the court to give me a full report to those powers that be in the Congress. So what do you think, you know, Chairman Nader and others are going to see eventually, Adam Schiff, eventually with this report? Will it be redacted? He laid out, I think, four or five different reasons or things that he would look at and redact. What do you think it's going to look like in the end?
I think it's going to be incredibly redacted. I think what will happen is that Jerry Nadler, who has oversight in that regard, will probably try to get Barr on contempt of Congress, and they'll go to court, and the administration will lose, but that'll try to run the clock out to the 2020 election. So I think Barr's going to give him what he thinks is, now assume for a moment, and this I think is the key issue, the report that Comey sent likely to Barr had redactions in it anyway. You know, so there's redactions there that Mueller on his own. And so for us to sit there and believe that Attorney General Barr had to go combing over this with a red pen is crazy. He probably he's going to redact as much as he possibly can, and I don't see, I certainly don't see Nadler or any of the other key people, Adam Schiff, you were talking about before, Elijah Cummings. They're not in a mood to play with Bill Barr. So they'll get their redacted Mueller report, and then they'll take him out for contempt of Congress, and they'll go to court. Eventually, we'll see it, but it ain't going to come anytime soon. By the way, just for the record, the Ken Starr report on Clinton was, there was absolutely nothing. The only redactions that were done in the Clinton thing had to do with people in grand jury situations, which of course is understandable. You might also remember that when Secretary Clinton was being drugged before the committees, they got all the 304 FISA warrant, all that stuff was done. They just basically blew past the law entirely and printed, every possible thing they could. So, we're talking a double-edged sword here on this one.
Absolutely. Switch gears real quick because we're going to go to break, and I'll ask the same question to Tony and Reggie. So far, so good for Trout and Harper, both doing well. Of course, Harper doing well against Washington. He got booed, I think, his first strike up there in Philly. But, he walked in saying before he got traded, do you think he's getting traded there? And he said, I'm paraphrasing, if they get rid of half of the Philly fans. So, you're not actually walking in on a good note. But three home runs so far for him, five for Trout. Surprised that they're off to a good start and seemingly right now at least, both hitting 300 in, 10, 11 games, that they're doing well so far.
Not really. I mean, they're both quality ball players. I mean, Trout is about, he's on a level that doesn't exist at this point. But Bryce is a showman. He did what he had to do. He did what he thought was right for him and his family. I honestly don't think that if he thought that that deal that he signed was 13 at 3 at 3:30, I think he could have had that in D.C. The problem is, they made it clear they didn't want to go past January 1st to make that deal. And, I think he thought that the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Yankees were going to be players in there, and they were going to go north of 350 all the way up into that 400 million area. And it just wasn't there. The market wasn't there. And even the Dodgers, who were interested, only wanted to give him a five-year contract because Stan Kasten and Andrew Friedman do not believe in long-term contracts beyond 5 years. The Giants took a last-second shot at it. I have no idea why. That made no sense, but it did anyway. So Philadelphia was, he really had a choice. Do I want to do a short-term deal with the Dodgers, or do I want to do a long-term deal in Philly? And obviously he made the deal.
Yeah, well, so far so good.
I don't have any beef with Bryce. He's a good kid. So, I wish him nothing but the best. So, he is a good guy, so, for what it's worth.
We'll see what happens, Jim, as always. I appreciate the extra time, man. And we'll finish our conversation we had off air a little bit later. I do apologize, but I will be giving you a call.
Not a problem.
Yes, sir.
Oh, always a pleasure, guys. Take care now.
Thank you. Jim Williams, of course, is a contributor with the Huffington Post. And, of course, you can look up Politically Incorrect, the podcast that he has. Take a 30-second break, come back, bring in Tony T. McLean and Reggie Howell.
If you want to hear another view of the latest developments in Trump's Washington, listen to the Dr. Larry Show. Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, Dr. Larry is a former businessman, entrepreneur, college president, and author who provides background and context for current events and trends in politics, education, foreign policy, and religion from a conservative perspective. Tune in and hear The Other Side as Dr. Larry talks with Washington insiders exclusively on blogtalkradio.com and the podcast at thebachelorpadnetwork.com.
Welcome back to the pad. Thank you for joining us. If you missed any part of the broadcast, you can go to our website, thebachelorpadnetwork.com, thebachelorpadnetwork.com. Incidentally, and I know it's short notice because we'll get out of here, if you want to chat, you can go to our chat site. It's mixlr.com. That's mixlr.com/the-bachelorpad. Radio network. You can go there and you can listen to the broadcast there. 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us. Press 1 to get on the line. Want to go to Tony T. Mac McLean and Reggie Howell. T, we just talked about the two guys in Trout and the fact that you look at all the money those guys are making at this point, and that was not a huge story in the mainstream. Certainly is a story on this broadcast, you know, because they do it. If they're black and brown and making a lot of money, that's the first thing that they talk about. Having said that, they're off to a good start. Again, 11, 12 games into the season. Your thoughts on them? And really, Trout, at this point, if the season continues to go the way it is, he's probably got more pressure or more on his shoulders because, you know, the Angels are off to a bad start.
Yeah, well, with both of them, they're going to go as far as their pitching will take them. You know, I think that look, they're gonna put up their numbers. You know, Trout I think is the better player. There's no doubt about that. The thing with Harper doesn't necessarily have to have a Harper type year for them to win. Philly's lineup is okay, and it's got balance. It has a good mix. You know, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but they're going to go as far as their pitching will take them. Philly's got a little bit better pitching than the Angels right now. Plus, the Angels are in a division that's very, very top heavy because of the Astros, and you know, the Astros to me are World Series contenders, and that's who they have to look up to 19 times a year, and they're going to have, you know, they've got to add more to it. Even their lineup, even more so this year, because, you know, Pujols is getting up there in age. He can't, you know, put up the same kind of numbers that he did back in the day. And let's face it, they really don't have that other worldly, not even worldly, but even break-even player in that lineup. I mean, you know, Cole Calhoun and some of the other guys on that team, just, you know, you let them beat you. You don't let Trout beat you.
Yeah, and, you know, Reggie, when you look at them, you know, like I said, if you look at the way this kid is playing in Philly, he did most of his damage, you know, in the Washington series, I guess, maybe seemingly wanting to prove himself or prove something for them not, you know, completely breaking the bank to keep him in town. But, you know, you look at these two teams and these two players, you know, they have unique situations. Like Tony said, Philly definitely has a better team. They certainly got better pitching, in my opinion. And so, how do you think these guys are going to end up? Who do you think will have a better year?
Well, the sad thing about it is what's happening in baseball right now is that they're still trying to get the young millennials in. But, L.A., if you could just give me a waiver real quick. We'll talk about these clowns here at UVA. And, T-Mac, you're going to love this. In the press conference yesterday, the young man, Hunter, who did all the hard lifting, did all the work, and she must not going to tell you what happened. had a couple of friends of mine that were there at the news conference. If you notice, they had the Europeans up there, basketball players, and they had the brother. They purposely, Richmond Times-Dispatch, Cummings, and the Roanoke Times, kept directing their questions to student-athletes of the Europeans. At the end of time we run out, they decided to ask one question to the young black player. Now, everybody said, why I'm being so petty? If you know the legacy situation that goes on, you had one kid that daddy gave the school over $1 million, and he was a quarterback, and the boy won't crap. Now, I want to say another word, but we're on a different show. This is the BS that's going on, and enrollment has gone down to less than 6% of black students at UVA. Now, just remember now, UVA is the same campus where you had that riot where Heather Hyde was killed and several young black men were brutalized by white supremacist gangs to the point that even they had tiki torches parading up and down the school. Now, this is an environment right here where you have the governor and the attorney general and blackface and refused to step down. And how ironic is that UVA wins the national championship front and center, and they make sure they parade the Europeans around. And again, I know y'all talking about baseball, but this is something that's going on behind the scenes, and we've known about it. See, you're going to love this. One of the European announcers for the UVA said that never before in the state of Virginia Commonwealth has a team ever won that championship in basketball. Well, me being the person I am, I had to call a local radio station today, and I said, well, you know, I hate to correct you guys, but there's another small school in Boston called Virginia University. They has won not one, not two, but three national championships in men basketball and one in the ladies. Oh, we forgot about that. Gentlemen, your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't root for anything in Charlottesville, and I don't root for anybody in the ACC for obvious reasons if you know me. So, you know, I was rooting for Texas Tech last night. And T, you can add to that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not, you know, again, it's Virginia. I'm not surprised. I remember, you know, wasn't it Charlottesville where you had the race riot, just a few years back? Yeah, you know.
Yes, sir.
It is what it is. Again, we can't sit around and wait for, I'm glad that you at least let them know that they aren't the first Virginia school to ever win a championship. But, you know, that's how narrow-minded white supremacists are, because the world revolves around them and anything else, you know, no surprise. Although I will say, I think it wound up being the game in and of itself. I think it wound up being a lot better than people thought it was going to be. It was actually a decent watching game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. You know, like I said, John Thompson had a great interview at the end with the coach, Tony Bennett, when he said, one of the European announcers said, hey, coach, what are you going to do after the game? He said, I don't know, I'm just relaxing. And John Thompson said, no, hell, you can go take a drink. You can get you a drink. What you going to do? Which I thought was kind of ironic. Big John telling it like it was, but I will give Tony Bennett credit. You know, he had the utmost respect for, I call him the general, John Thompson, because we know that his son coached in the Final Four and the days of Georgetown, as well as Big John bringing home the title in Seattle when he was a coach at Georgetown. So it's kind of ironic that Bennett and his father are now both coaches in Final Four. So it was at least nice that, you know, the European did give Devon to the elder and Big John Thompson, showing respect to him.
Well, I not to belabor the point, I give them credit. And I had somebody say, LA, you said that he couldn't win. Well, Bill Cowher won a Super Bowl in spite of. So, you know, a coach with a good team and the right seating and the right lightning and a nice luck and all that can win. So I'm not a Tony Bennett fan. And for those, again, the reasons why I'm not an ACC fan, because they praise themselves as the greatest conference on the planet, but more than half of the institutions that perform athletically in their conference came from the Big East. So, what are you saying? Really? Like, most of them. They lucked up with Virginia, and you know, it is what it is. But you know, you congratulate them and you keep it moving. I know Baylor T. A lot of people, as good as Baylor's been on the women's side all year, and they have been good all year, no one really gave them a big chance to beat the arsenal of Muff McGraw and Notre Dame. Notre Dame coming back late on UConn, their nemesis, and they've been beating up on Geno, rightly so, lately. But you know, and then they want to kill this kid for missing foul shots down the line. But Notre Dame had chances before that. But hats off to Baylor, their premier team and university. And I think it's good for the women's game that now you have Notre Dame winning a couple, Baylor winning a couple. You know, we've seen what
Don't forget South Carolina.
I was going to say Dawn Staley in South Carolina. So we've seen some different teams. I think it's really good for the game that you have 5, 6, 7 elite teams that have an opportunity other than the Lady Huskies in Connecticut.
And it was reflective, I guess, in the ratings and in the attendance, the highest attendance for Final Four, I guess, in a while. And also the ratings and it's not bad considering ESPN, again, buried the game, putting it on at 6 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon where you literally had to, go and find it. But, no, this will always bode well for women's college hoops because as good as it is to see dominance from UConn, it's good to see now that the rest of college basketball is in good shape. You see what Oregon did, being able to get there. And, the girl's going to come back next year for her senior year to try and see if they can pull it off. So maybe Oregon can get inspired by what Virginia did and maybe get to the finals again or either win it. But no, it's been a slow process, but it's been good to see all of women's college basketball grow. I'm anxious to see who they're going to wind up hiring at Tennessee because that's going to be a hornet's nest no matter who takes that job, as Holly Warlick found out. But it bodes well for women's basketball that you're seeing more of a balance instead of sort of the same 2-3 teams win every year.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as much as I am, UConn fan, men and women, I do like to see that because it's for the good of the game. Once we get some balance, I certainly want to see UConn win some, some more titles. But I have an issue with Geno too. He's smug and arrogant. That's a problem for me.
Well, put it this way, they're still going to be in the mix. I do think he'll win another title at some point, probably more sooner than later. But because it's not going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be handed to him, but like they're going to have to work really hard for it. And this was a very, very good UConn team, and they have some good players coming back next year. You know, I to be honest with you, you talked about, basically the ACC East now.
Right.
If there's one team that's been affected more by the blowing up of the Big East, I think it's UConn because they've dominated, the American Conference, but they don't really have much to show for it. I mean, I think it hurts them in the long run. It's not like before where the Big East had teams like Notre Dame and Syracuse and Rutgers that were national powers, and you would occasionally you would get challenged more. They're not getting challenged now, and I do think it hurts them when it comes to the as they get closer and closer in the year. It's, you know, when they beat teams by like 40 or 50 during the regular season, it doesn't help them in the long run because, I think a lot of them being able to, quote, unquote, dominate in the American Conference hurts them in the long run because they don't really get challenged. And when they do get challenged, they don't meet up to the same standard. Now, do you put that on Geno? Do you put that on the players?
Well, I put that on Geno. I always put it on the coaches. If you got the talent and you don't win, that's my point about Tony Bennett. You have the talent, you don't win. He won, okay, I give him the credit this year. If you have the talent, you don't win, and something's not right. And Geno has been dominating it, but, you know, Muffin said, nah, I can recruit too. And she can coach, you know.
And I think especially Baylor, the coach from Baylor really can coach.
She had three championships. You know, we talked about this years ago when Winston was dominating in CIAA football, and you basically had a bunch of these CIAA coaches, you know, whining and moaning. But at some point they just said, you know what, we need to shut the hell up and just go out and recruit. And I think that's what you see happening in women's basketball now, is that you see everybody not, you know, cowering in fear with the Tennessees or the Stanfords or the UConns anymore. Now you see teams make a run. You see the Iowas, although Iowa's always been a very decent, but you see Oregon, you know, make a run like they did. You see Louisville be able to, you know, do things. You see Maryland and all these other schools that have built great programs. You talked about Dawn Staley, who went from, you know, UVA to Temple, and then to do the same thing with South Carolina. Again, it bodes, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but no, it bodes well for women's basketball just to see that, you know, to share the wealth, so to speak.
Yeah. Let me touch on three things before we get out of here. We'll touch on on Thursday, the college cheating stuff a little bit later. I want to stay with baseball. When you look at it, see, the Trump administration declared illegal this deal that not only was a deal with MLB and the United States, but through the Obama administration, but a deal that passed that gave the open for people to go back and forth in Cuba. The case in point with the Cuban Baseball Federation and Major League Baseball coming with this deal. Now they're saying it's illegal in terms of people who defect here. It's along the lines of the immigration debate that and the hate and racist stuff that he's doing. We don't have to get to that. But what does this do to baseball in itself? And just to play advocate as it relates to our discussion before about the identity of baseball and the lack of black players, does this open the door at all, even if this is temporary, like if it gets reversed and then Cuban defectors can come and play again? Does this help black players in the short term that may take a look at it, may say, okay, well, we can't have these phenomena coming out of Cuba right now. Let's take a look at another area.
I think it's a temporary thing, because remember there've been folks that have been defecting way before the orange idiot got in there. I don't think this affects this one bit. I think if a guy wants to come over here to play, they're gonna come. It's not, you know, if they, you know, we all know the story of El Duque and then his brother Levon and a bunch of other players before, during, and since. I think it makes for a nice headline. I think it just shows even more. It's funny. He's basically doing the same thing that Castro did, when you really just sit down and think about it.
It's almost like the drug trade. You got the DEA in place to stop it, but drugs keep coming in. You got the factors. They got struggling anyway, regardless of what band he puts on, is what you said.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I don't want to say it's a non-story, but I don't think it will affect it as much as people think it will. I mean, it may make it a little bit tougher at some point, but I think it. But again, if a guy wants to come over, they're going to come over. I don't think that's gonna change. I don't think that'll change.
You don't think so,
T,
with this fool with this new administration and they catch a hell, especially with the wetland, where if you're a dark skin, you should put your black ass back across the water.
You know what?
So if you like standing, you know,
you put one foot.
If he's going to look at the black and brown people and try to keep them out on the borders, he's probably going to look at the black and brown people that's trying to come over from Cuba and other places to play baseball. It's America.
He's already
did that.
He's already ruled on that. That was today.
I think it will be more domestically. I don't think. I mean, look, they're going to look for, because if they want them, they're going to find a way to do it. I mean, we've seen and read and heard all the stories over the years. You know, we saw how, you know, Puig came over and other ball players, and that was during the time when the border was whatever. Again, so much of what he does is just blowhard, and you've got an ignorant media that literally and figuratively buys into anything and everything that he does, and you don't look at it big picture wise. Now, like I said, domestically, will it affect? Of course. If you're asking me, is it going to affect baseball's thing with Cuba? Maybe temporarily, but I doubt it.
You know, Reggie, I guess who's to say if he has this power in the NFL, to Tony's point, that he's got his friends in the MLB and it's just for show, and then his MLB friends are saying, look, we can't have this, it's bad for business. They all, you know, playing together, if you will. So, you know, they put this big nothing to do out about this, but at the end of the day, I guess, Reggie, you know, whether they smuggled in or not, they're not going to stop it. And he's not really trying to stop it. He's just trying to show face.
Yeah. The thing, like I said, with this administration, he runs it just like a criminal, like he Dillinger, and he puts people in place and his lawyer, crooked-ass lawyers, to stagnate. And again, with the wetland ruling, where if you're dark-skinned, they'll send your black ass back across the water to Cuba. And when you're light-skinned, you get a pass with little Ellen Gonzalez, not to get that case. You know, so I've seen this act before, and it's like a Shakespeare play. It's always a tragedy at the end when it comes to blind and black people. And you know he has a hard on already when it comes to sports figures because of what he did to Kraft. Let's not forget that. This man sat up the owner of the world champions. You know, the lady that was in charge of the other place, the lady that was in charge of the massage, was sitting there watching the Super Bowl with him. So, come on. As my cousin Pat pointed out, the president has at his power that he can sign an investigation anytime he wants to. And these sorry-ass Democrats, in my opinion, don't have the balls to stand up to this guy. So call me, you know, crazy or call me stupid, but this guy has people in place that are doing his dirty work, and I think it's going to tip it down to not only just baseball but other sporting events, you know, especially coming with black and brown people.
Some of your detractors might call you crazy, but we would never call you stupid, Reggie. Let's be clear about that.
Hey, look, I'm still recovering from these crackers. And I use that word, with these crackers in UVA just got me upset, man. I mean, they have went white to white. They act like, you know, they're the great thing. The worst thing that happened to us was them winning that championship. You know, it was all out season on white folks now, boy. They really feeling themselves now.
Yeah, Charlottesville is that's what.
Oh man, Clanville. I call it Charlottesville. I call it Clanville. It ain't Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. It's Clanville.
Let me ask you this, Reggie. Final question to both of you. I'll stay with you, Reggie. Just on the field, surprising. Tampa off to a good start, and you know, I think if I'm not mistaken, T before the season said, you know, Tampa would be a lot better than they are. And again, this is all based on 12 games, so I'm not getting crazy on it. But you know, your surprises and disappointments. Obviously, Boston off to a rough start. You look at Seattle lights out. The Dodgers off to a good start. Philly in the East. I mentioned Seattle with 10 wins. Any surprises and disappointments that you want to mention, Ribby, so far, 12, 13 games into the season?
No, man, it's too early to tell. I mean, this is way too early. The people are jumping off the buildings and calling the big-time teams and how it's going week. So, come on. Talk to me when the halfway season comes. The bats are always ahead of the other pitching, and everything always, T-Mac said, everything is always balanced stuff out. So, it's nothing new. This is reciprocal as far as baseball, how things go.
T, I will say, though, not the word, I would never say concern after 12 games. Kansas City doesn't look good at all. I mentioned Boston. I am so afraid with Severino. Went back to New York. I know the Yankees are in Houston.
Can I give you an update on Severino?
Is he out for the year? Please don't tell me out for the year.
No. 6 weeks. 6 weeks.
Oh, geez. That's a blessing, but I guess, like you said, get the injuries out now, and then, it's a long season. But boy, oh boy, they already had, two position players go down, and now a Severino. But, you look at it, the Reds are probably who we think they might be. Certainly the Dodgers, Milwaukee, who we think it'll be. But assess so far, anything that you've seen that might be slightly different from what you thought.
I hate to be a broken record. Give me 20 games and 20 degrees more in the temperature, and then we can talk. Because it's 12 games is almost too much. It's almost not enough of a sample because it's just it's just so long. I am a little surprised with Tampa. I still hate that whole opener thing. I really do. I think it stinks. I mean, if you don't have a good enough of it is what it is. I know a couple of the teams that I picked aren't getting off to good starts. Both the Sox, Chicago, and Boston. But again, it's early. It's early. I mean, I got fellow Met fans calling me in the middle of the night saying, get ready for the World Series. I'm like, freaking idiot.
Wait,
do you remember what happened last year?
Wait,
AJ. Part of before we go. The first one being with DeGrom, they're making this big to do with the Gibson record deal. That thing there, they love to, and you said this, we all, the three of us know that, they load them up. If they can get the apple pie dude and break a record that if it was Hank Aaron or, Willie Mays or someone now, in this case, Bob Gibson, they load it up. Your thoughts on how DeGrom has been pitching and the big to-do about that. And then the second part you can answer, I actually had a conversation that I was – looking on MLB, and someone actually asked me the same thing, that if his career ended right now, would Mike Trout be in the top 10 all-time players? I couldn't even believe it, in my opinion. I couldn't believe that's even a question. Based on these numbers and the metrics, they don't look at all the body. Baseball is so different than just 365, and they talk about the WAR numbers and all this other stuff. Mike Trout should not even be close to any conversation of top 10 anything at this point. And they want to put him in. I heard some guy say, yeah, right now he's the best since the 20th century. Are you serious? Mm-hmm. Really? Mike Trout? Come on, I know he's a great player, T.
Yeah.
But come on,
and
you you can name 20 players probably better than Mike Trout in their history.
And see, that gets lost in the sauce. They are great players. I don't think that's something we're not saying. They are. It's not we're not saying it. They're great players. But when you, I always go back to something we always talk about before. The difference between white sports fans and black sports fans is that white sports fans always have to lord their guys up. Their guys have to be greater than life, greater than God, greater than whatever. Look. We all love Dolly, but we knew that Ali was a man. We saw we accepted him for his flaws. We accepted him for his goodness and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to you know, sacrilegiously worship Muhammad Ali.
Right.
It's a complete look. I, you know,
amen.
I'm not even going to dignify the Gibson stuff. That's all about numbers as you whatever. Now I'm old enough to look. I pretty much watched damn near every start that Tom Seaver made in a Met uniform for his career. I watched pretty much Doc Gooden. Same thing, you know, Kuzman, all those guys. I'm not one of these guys that just basically, you know, remembers the 86 team and that's it. Jacob DeGrom is on a pace possibly where he could be mentioned in the same breath as Seaver. But there's a lot more that has to be done. But in this age of the internet and what have you, and everything has to be the greatest of all time and the greatest of whatever,
right.
You know, it gets lost in the sauce. Look, is Trout on the pace to do some stuff? Of course he does. Of course he does. But when you see, it's the ESPN generation where if it didn't happen before September of 79, it didn't happen. And if we don't have video on it, it didn't happen. And my retort to that has always been, well, okay, fine. I don't recognize anything about baseball before April 15th, 1947.
You still want to make
that trade?
Yeah, half of them won't even know what date that was. They'd be like, well, what is that?
Yeah, well, you know, as a lot of people like to say, Google it.
Yeah, it's just amazing that we shouldn't even. First of all, like you said, can the guy retire before we say that he's one of the great this and great that of all time?
Well,
I mean,
that fine line between hype and whatever, and see. Especially now when there are more resources, when you can go to Baseball Reference, when you can go to YouTube and watch these guys. Look, there's, you know, did Jacob DeGrom have a great year last year? Yes. I still don't think he deserved the Cy Young last year. I'd have given it to Sturger last year. The fact that they whined about how he didn't get any run support, It was embarrassing, to be quite honest with you. Now this year he's getting some support, although he gave up a home run tonight and he's down 1-0. So, you know, of course someone will be blamed for that, but that's a whole other story. But put it this way, people forget. People always talk about great records that may never be broken. The one record about 68 that people keep forgetting. 1.12. That was Gibson's ERA that year in 68. I double dare somebody to tell me that someone was going to get that for the year, especially with the way they, you know, baby these pitchers now and don't let, you know, where if you go six innings, it's considered a quality start. If Tony La Russa even thought about coming out there to take the ball away from Gibson, he'd have gotten his little butt whooped.
Yep. Well, if there's a time that 1.12 will get broken, it would be because they skew the numbers. The metrics are so, they're so anal about it.
Like I said, you can't spell analytics without spelling anal.
That's right. Reggie, your final thoughts on that? And I know, like I said, you came in. We're going to run. But I know you came in at the tail end of that conversation, just kind of taking it back to ethnic groups. And if you don't have sensitivity for your own ethnic group, I hate to scare the folks listening, but you don't have all, your own sensitivity of your own ethnic group, how could you have sensitivity for other groups? And that includes poor whites. If people don't, it's not the ethnic, but that's a group, right? So if you don't have sensitivity, and some people grow up in certain sections, certain places, and they don't want to experience certain things. I get that. But because of that, you know, you need to be a little more morally and socially conscious of these things. And it all ties into the Cuban defection, this guy at the White House trying to keep these brown folks out, trying to leave to come to this country, just like if they were coming from, you know, some other country in Central America, trying to come here to better their lives and their families. The same thing in baseball. Cubans coming here trying to keep their, and this guy right here being as racist. And so you're going to laugh at the word Redskin, and these are the only times I say it when I want to make a point. If you want to say that you're not sensitive to being called Redskin and you're one of the Native Americans that they're degrading, then, yeah, you could stay home. I don't need you. You can't fight. You can't fight.
L.A., can I just add to that?
Sure.
Sorry, Red.
Go ahead.
The one thing, sadly, the Native American community, you talked about the genocide that happens there. See, that's the thing. A lot of their elders aren't here to let these younger folks know what's going on. See, luckily with us as black men and black women, our elders are still around. You know, at least not all of them, but we at least were around when our elders were trying to tell us to not eat that peanut butter and knucklehead sandwich.
That's right.
The sad thing is, because of the genocide that's been a huge part of the Native American community, there aren't too many of their elders around to really let them know what's going on. And sadly, I don't think this is, you know, being racist when I say this, because of the imagery that they get from mainstream white media, they're taught this, in a sense, to hate themselves. Now, the sad thing is, we've got folks within our community that have that self-hate gene as well. But at least I think the one thing that has helped us is that we've interacted with our elders to let us know. And in a sense, now that we're older, now we're the elders letting our, you know, youngins know.
Yeah, and real quick, when you had the rapper that was gunned down in California, you see NBA stars like LeBron James and Westbrook in tears and hurt because they know they're trying to get back to the community. And just like Malcolm and King, you know, especially Malcolm, they got gunned down by somebody who looks like them. That's the sad part about it. And I'll just say in closing that we have Ali Atwater, who, you know, in Durham, L.A., the movie I saw this past week with Taraji P. Henson, was called a sellout because she had the audacity to wear Klansmen when they tried to get young black kids into school and get education. She was called a sellout by her own people. That's what frustrated a lot of us, especially me. When you're trying to do the right thing and Negroes want to cut your legs out, I just close on that.
Well, that's a great way to close, Reggie, because it's my point. You can have some people that look like you that haven't had that experience that just go about their lives, or you can have people that look like you that have our experiences. I know specifically T and I from the project Franklin Street, right? So you can have those experiences, and then you can try to make change. If it's even working with the enemy to try to bring some change, you educate people to help make that change. But if you sit on the sidelines and you laughing while they calling you Redskin, are you serious? You don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody to, if that's
important.
Like, mm-hmm. one of our friends. Go ahead.
No, it's important that we know about ourselves, but it's also important that we know about our enemies as well.
That's
yeah,
right.
So close. Oh, and guys, real quick, Gary lost his father, so we definitely want to send our prayers to Big G.
Yeah.
You know, his father made the transition this week, so prayers and love go out to our colleague, Big Gary.
Absolutely. Reach out to him. That's it for us. If you missed any part of our broadcast, please do. Go to our website, thebachelorpadnetwork.com, thebachelorpadnetwork.com. You can listen to the show in its entirety, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Pad Nation, Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. Of course, on LinkedIn at LA Bachelor. And, of course, on all of these other sites, tunein.com as well. You can listen to the podcast of any of our shows on tunein.com. That's it. For T, for Reg, for Jim Williams, LA, enjoy the rest. Get back with you on the Pad. Stay tuned.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is?
Julie.
Julie. Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is? Anybody? Anybody?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Woo-hoo! Leslie, guess what today is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Hump day! Woo-hoo!
Yeah, this is Tom Donson of the Donson Files. I'll introduce myself. I am the chairman of America's PAC.